This month, our whole month is about perfection, and perfection, of course, is the awareness, the truth about God, that God is that perfection. It's not the same as perfectionism, because perfectionism is trying so hard to do something right that there are all sorts of blind spots up. So I'm not talking about perfectionism. I'm talking about perfection. The truth of you is your perfection. It's who you really are. And it is who and what everyone really is. But oftentimes we forget. My topic this morning is, oddly enough, you're not perfect, but I am. Which is the damned lie. It's a lie. It's not the truth. It could never be the truth, because I can only see what I am. You can only see what you are. You see it through your own eyes and through your own heart. So if you're seeing someone else as not perfect, it's coming from the place of not perfect within you, the imperfection within you, which again is a lie. But oftentimes we do come from that place. I was thinking, what an odd title for me to talk about to a bunch of metaphysicians who know that we would never say that. You're not perfect. We would never say that. And then I started thinking about my own life. Exactly. Exactly. And how many times, I mean, I was 6 years old when I first remember taunting someone because she didn't look the same as we did, and she had lived in a different kind of a house, and we were going to her birthday party. All these little girls, there must have been 12 of us, and we were mean. I mean, we were really mean. But it's one of those things that gets repressed in my memory, because I like to think of myself as a pretty good kid. And for the most part, I was. But there were also those times when I did things that were not the truth of me. They were socially acceptable in that little circle. In that little circle, it was absolutely fine to be taunting the birthday girl. I'm sure if our parents had seen it, we would have had quite a tongue lashing and some grounding and some other consequences. But of course, it was just kids, so no one heard it. But it was been in my heart for that many years. That many decades. So I wanted to talk about, I really wanted to talk about those places where we come to life from a place of superiority or inferiority. And neither is correct. Neither is correct. At Billy Hart's memorial service, one of her grandchildren, and I can't remember which one, said, "My grandma always told me when I go into a room that I'm just as good as every person, no matter how old they are or how much they have accomplished or how much money they have, and I'm no better than any of the people there." What a great thing to teach a kid. What a great thing that you're welcome into this room just the way you are. You don't have to change anything. You are already okay, and you're no better than the homeless guy out on the street. That truly is a spiritual truth, because we're looking through the eyes of unity and truth, of oneness. And from that place, although it may be factually so that you're not perfect, but then neither am I. But notice how that it was phrased. My writers were really brilliant. You're not perfect, but I am. The I am of us is the perfect part. So you're not perfect and I'm not perfect, but the I am in all of us is that perfection. The I am in all of us is that perfection. And sometimes we don't understand the people that have come to be our teachers. What came to me as I was doing that meditation was a man that, the last man that broke my heart. No, it wasn't my husband. It was someone before that. That's why I married my husband, because I was certain he would not break my heart, and he didn't. But this guy, I was passionately, madly, hopelessly in love. Now, those words, madly and hopelessly, don't really go with wise spiritual being. But what they would have gone with is me moving to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho at the drop of a hat, because that's where he lived. He had no money, but my heart was all ready to just throw everything away and go and live there. And I was thinking, oh, I'm so glad I live here. I live beside the ocean with the palm trees. It was the best gift. It was the wisest gift. And in the moment, I couldn't see any good in it. In the moment that he called and said, I'm not coming to celebrate our birthdays. I'm sorry, I won't be there. I can't do this long-distance relationship any longer. I was devastated. I don't look very devastated now, do I? I really wasn't even devastated then, coming to think about it. But I thought I was. That was my judgment. And it was a judgment full of all of the other things about expectations about how a lover would treat you, which then influenced a lot of my unconscious choices. Anyway, it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. And I was thinking back to my first marriage, in which I spent most of my time trying to fix my husband, because I thought I was just fine. And if only he were a little different, or a lot different, we would be just perfect. Of course we could never be perfect. I was seeing him as something that needed to be fixed. Do you follow? As long as you've got that idea anywhere in mind, first of all, it's not real love. Because real love comes from a place where you love yourself so much that you see the other as whole, complete, and perfect, just the way they are and just the way they are not. So now there's nothing to fix. You might prefer a different shirt or a different way of being, but there's nothing to fix. While this, I was preparing mentally for this message, I was reading a book called Soul Prints. Some of you read it before. It's a, we don't no longer have it in the bookstore, but we can get it, I'm sure. It's a book by a rabbi by the name of Mark Gaffney. And he tells all of these delightful stories about traveling on our own path, about living our journey. And he tells this great story, and I'm going to shorten it up quite a bit. So one of the most famous teachers, in all of Judaism, is a rabbi by the name of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov has all of these extraordinary abilities. And he was making his transition, so he gave each of his students a job. Each of them, he decided what they were each going to do. And of course, because he was so psychic and so close to the divine, they all did whatever he said. So to one, he said, you are going to be a teacher, and you are going to be a healer, and you are going to be this, and you are going to be that. And he got to this one man who really wanted to put down roots and stay in one place. And he said, you're going to be an itinerant storyteller. And he said, master, are you sure? Are you sure that's my job? I don't even remember stories, and I don't like to travel. I want to stay home with my wife and kids. And the master said, this is your path. This is your journey. So he went for years and years. He went from town to town, and sure enough, he'd have stories to tell from the Baal Shem Tov. And he finally heard of this one place. He traveled many miles and many hours to get to this one place where he heard there was a rich man there that would pay 50 rupees for every Baal Shem Tov story he was told. He thought, I'll be rich. I know hundreds of stories. I'll be able to go home and settle down with my wife. This is why he's made me the itinerant storyteller, the traveling storyteller. So he travels all the way to the village, and all of the villagers were there in the rich man's house, eager to listen to these stories. And he opened his mouth, and nothing came out. Now, that's actually a speaker's worst nightmare. Not one word will come out. That happened to me once many years ago. I was like, nothing to say. Anyway, back to the Baal Shem Tov story. He said, oh, I so apologize. I can't even remember one story. And so he went away, and he said, I'll come back tomorrow. They said, oh, it's all right. You've been traveling for hours. You're probably sleepy. So he went back the next day, and he was optimistic, and he opened his mouth, and again, not one word came out. Now he was humiliated, and the rich man gave him a few rupees and sent him on his way. And he was so discouraged, and he was traveling slowly through the town, and he finally got to just about the edge of town, and there were some shacks all boarded up. And that reminded him of one story. That reminded him of one story. And so he said, I have to go back and tell my one story. So he went back in, and he knocked on the rich man's door, and he didn't even notice that the rich man had been sobbing. He just had to get the story out before he forgot it. And so he said, I just remember this one story. Many years ago, the Baal Shem Tov took me to a village where there was a high priest, and the high priest was inciting violence against the Jews in this area. And the Baal Shem Tov marched right into the village, and of course, very obviously Jewish, and right straight to a door and knocked on the door and announced who he was, and the man said, you can't come in. It's not safe for Jews to be in this town. And he knocked again, and he said, you must let me in. So he let him in, and meanwhile, this man that's telling the story is scared. He said, I didn't, and the Baal Shem Tov said, go right across the square and knock on the high priest's door and tell him I need to see him. He was so afraid, but he knew he had to do what his master told him to do. So across the square he went, knocked on the door and said, the Baal Shem Tov needs to see you right now across the way. He was so surprised. The high priest came out, and he went with him, went across the square and went into the man's home, and he was there for 13 hours. For 13 hours, the Baal Shem Tov talked to this high priest. And then he left, and they left, and there were no more. There were no more riots. There was no more violence. And he said, and that's the only story I remember, but I got it all out. And the man stopped crying. He said, do you not recognize me? Do you not see who I am? And he looks. He said, I was that man. I was that high priest. I so did not want to be a poor Jewish man, and you know I couldn't get ahead being a Jew. So I gave up my religion, and I rose up in the church, and I knew that I'd get even higher if I could incite violence against Jews, so I pretended I wasn't one. And the Baal Shem Tov talked to me for 13 hours about being true to my path, traveling my path, loving who I am and being on my journey. And the storyteller said, oh, he said, but what did you have to do? How did you change? He said, when the Baal Shem Tov said that to me, he said one other thing, because I asked him, when will I know that I've been forgiven, I've been redeemed for all that I've done? And he said this, when you hear your story told back to you, you will know that you've been forgiven. Now, if the storyteller hadn't been true to his path, that man would never have known, because he was the only one that went. Uniquely, you are the only one that's living your life. You're the only one that can make a difference right where you are, in your home, in your community. Not by doing something else that maybe you long to do, like the moment 25 years ago, I longed to move to Idaho, yeah, wherever that was, that snowy place. The storyteller did not want to. He didn't want the job he was given, but it was his job. It was his job to tell that story so the man would know the holiness, the wholeness, the perfection that he is. So here's your assignment, if you want to choose it. This next week, as you're doing all the things, I know we're all doing lots of things as we prepare for the holidays. Remember, they're holy days. And the one that makes them holy is you. You make them holy by what you bring to each moment. So bring the very best of yourself to the moment so that you can see the best in everyone around you, in your spouse, in your partners, in your friends, just the way they are. And just the way they are not. And if you find yourself feeling superior or inferior, remind yourself it's a damn lie. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.